This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Trifley's got it. Got line aim with him. The pass is shot. Wow! Oh, my! That was amazing. Peter, you have been looking forward to seeing that, haven't you? Not to see the Avalanche get scored off, but to see what line aim can do. That was Ovechkin-like.
See how he turned? He wasn't on his backhand. He turns and he gives Scheifele a perfect look. Turn, pivot, fire. That's one of those ones, Mike, you got no shot. And he just fires a bomb.
Patrick Laine impressing the broadcast crew of the Colorado Avalanche back in the day for a second straight week. Laine, in the news, the subject of trade rumors, of trade talk. We'll talk about that this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in, not studio, but Dave Minook's living room.
Let's call it our studio.
Our
now.
New studio. How about that? Our new studio, and that Dave Minook is on my right. Ezra Ginsberg, sporting the old school Illegal Curve t-shirt, is across from us. Gentlemen, good to see you on a bright and sunny 12th day of the month of September. How are you, gentlemen, on this fine Saturday?
Good morning, boys. Doing well. Yeah, like, it's pretty nice. It was pretty crappy out earlier this week, but I'm still kind of recovering from that unbelievable hockey game last night. Like, for me, guys, so far the conference finals have been a little bit underwhelming the first couple of games of each series, but that game last night, like, what more could you ask for, right? The Lightning tying the game up in the third period, and then the late Brock Nelson goal. You had a couple fights, even though I think when you're talking about Matt Martin versus Barclay Goodrow, that's a huge mismatch. And I don't really know why he even took that fight.
Let me start you right there. I'll tell you what I didn't like about that, about the Matt Martin's activity there. You know, they're going to fight. There was some pent-up anger after the Nelson goal to give him the lead and then the empty net goal right afterwards. They dropped the gloves. You could see that Goodrow didn't want to go because, like you said, that is a mismatch. Martin hit him a couple times when he was on the ice. I thought that was dirty. I thought that was cheap of Matt Martin, and I didn't like it. The guy squared up. It's a mismatch. They fought. They went down to the ice. Martin shouldn't have hit him another couple times.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I'm not going to argue with that. And, you know, there was a lot of chippiness, guys, you know, in the last minute of that game. And Nikita Kucherov gave J.G. Pageau a good whack. Like, that wasn't a love tap. That was a pretty good whack because J.G. Pageau, of course, right before the empty net goal, stole the puck away from Kucherov, right, with that really nice play. And Pageau is a guy that we'll talk about later when we talk about the East Final. But I just thought that game was just terrific because, you know, you were thinking, you know, when the Lightning tied that game up in the third period, Tyler Johnson's goal that, of course, was almost overturned, you're thinking, okay, this game's going to overtime. You know, Tampa Bay is going to go up 3-0, maybe even sweep the series. But you go back to game two, that game was seconds away from going to overtime. The Islanders, you know, arguably played their best game in game two. You know, so that series easily could have been tied 1-1. Just a fantastic series. And I just love the way the Islanders play hockey, right? Like, we've talked about that fourth line, and, you know, Cizikas obviously, you know, didn't play. J.G. Pageau was on that line with Martin and Clutterbuck. But you just have to love the way they play, right, guys? Like, they just fight and claw for everything. You know, with the exception of, you know, a guy like, you know, Matt Barzal, if you want to call him an emerging superstar, and I would, you know, they don't really have that many game breakers. They win by committee. You know, they get goals from guys like Adam Pellick and Clutterbuck. So just wanted to get that in there. I thought that game last night was one of the best so far, maybe, of these playoffs.
Duly noted, and we'll talk more about the Stanley Cup playoffs as we move on over the next 3 hours. We're with you, of course, until 12 noon this morning, and then right into this afternoon. But we start with the Winnipeg Jets, and I want to read this tweet from Arpan Basu. Okay. And we know Arpan, he covers the Montreal Canadiens. He's been on the show many times before.
He's in the bubble.
He's in the bubble. Yep. He works for the Athletic, so
he's a bubble boy.
This is the quote, and it came courtesy of Murat's article in the Athletic.
Yep.
If the Jets choose to trade Ehlers, his contract should make for a hefty return. But I wonder about Laine. Yes, he's a tremendous talent that has everything you'd want in a high-end goal scorer. But the uncertainty of an expiring contract in this landscape might scare off some teams. The thing that makes Ehlers so valuable is what makes me wonder if the Jets can get fair value for Laine. And I got to tell you guys, I read that tweet, and I like Arpan, and he does a great job covering the Canadians and covering the league. But I was flabbergasted. We're wondering if a team is going to get fair value for a guy who is probably one of the best goal scorers in the entire National Hockey League and is has a transcendent shot and has the skill set to be Ovechkin of the 2020 decade. And we're wondering, A, if he's going to be traded. I don't believe he is. We outlined why it doesn't make any sense on last week's show, and I don't think my opinion has changed on that front. I think all this trade talk is nothing but silly season on steroids. Mm-hmm. But now we're wondering, not only is he going to be traded, but if they're going to get fair value for him. I just can't believe it. We are absolutely, it's insanity. I don't know if it's 2020. I don't know if it's COVID. I don't know if it's everyone being stuck in quarantine for too long, but I think everybody needs to step back, stop tweeting for a while, and maybe find some rational thought here, Dave.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I'll just jump in here
or
first because.
Ezzy, apparently, yeah, well, he's champing at the bit there.
I am champing. Or if you like chomping, even though it's champing.
It is champing. You do chomp on other things, but this is champing.
It's pretty simple. You can get fair value for Patrick Laine. We mentioned it last week. If it's Jack Eichel, or if it's a really good young center. I mean, that's how you get fair value.
A superstar. In the league.
You have to get an excellent either forward or defenseman. I mean, I don't know why you would do Laine for a goaltender. So it's either going to be, you know, a number one center, a number one winger, guys, an elite. I mean, the guy that I used last week was, you know, Miro Heiskanen or Akiel Makar. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes absolutely no sense that you would ever trade Heiskanen or Makar, but it also doesn't.
Dallas and Colorado aren't doing that, and neither are the Jets doing it with Laine.
Exactly. So, I mean, there is a player out there that you could trade Laine for, but it's not about that. It's about why are you trading Laine unless you don't think you can re-sign him to a long-term contract. And that's what we talked about last week, and that's what many people in the hockey world have been discussing, is that that would be the only reason. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, his goal-scoring prowess. He is elite. Like, you know, Ovechkin is I still think, number one. Yep. Austin Matthews is up there. But you're talking about Ovechkin, you're talking about Matthews, and Laine's in that conversation. You could throw, you know, a guy like Nikita Kucherov in there, Pasternak, who obviously would have hit 50 goals if it wasn't for COVID. So he's in a club, guys, of half a dozen guys, right? Like, the best goal scorers in the world. That has to be emphasized. What Laine does well, he does better than 99% of the league, right? Mm-hmm. Does he have his flaws? Of course. Most players do. And we've talked about it. And we all agreed that he took a step forward this year. Like, if you look at his isolated defensive impact, like, it wasn't good, it wasn't great last year, but it was a lot better than it was, you know, his first couple of years in the league. So Laine definitely has work to do on the defensive side of his game. But let me tell you something, a lot of 22-year-old hockey players do as well.
I would say that Patrick Laine defensively is better, certainly as good as Mark Scheifele. And
I'm not sure if that's ringing praise, though.
It's not ringing praise, but you don't hear anybody talking about, I mean, Scheifele's defense has not really, you know, improved, you know, dramatically over the course of his career, and he's been around for a while now. Patrick Laine, I think, will continue to improve on the defensive side. I mean, there were a couple games last year where we saw him on the back check, a couple instances where he did a poor man's imitation of Mark Stone, picking somebody's pocket and turning it around and going back the other end of the ice and having a scoring chance. And you don't hear anybody, you know, you don't hear the Vegas Golden Knights talking about trading Mark Stone. I just can't believe it anymore. I don't understand what we are talking about here.
You know, something that hasn't been mentioned, guys, a lot, at least I haven't heard it mentioned a lot. If you look at the Selke ballot, Sean Couturier also obviously won the Selke ballot. I think they got down to, I think they had 40 to 50 players on there. I feel like it was around 45 players. And what I mean by that is they showed all the players that got votes for the Selke trophy.
I'm going to pull it up real quick here if I can.
There wasn't one single Winnipeg Jet on that list is what I'm saying. And the point I'm trying to make here is the Jets don't really have that many great defensive forwards.
Right.
Right? Like, I would say Andrew Kopp is one of their better defensive forwards. I would say Adam Lowry is one of their better defensive forwards. And the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, when you talk about players like Mark Scheifele and Patrick Laine, and I would throw in Kyle Connor into 100%. That conversation, yep. These guys are offense-first type of players. The Jets still are one of the top offensive teams in the league. Maybe they took a little bit of a hit this past season, you know, because you lost offensive defensemen like Buff and Trouba, right, Dave?
Yeah.
But the point I'm trying to make here is, like, maybe that's something that Chevy wants to address when he's considering, you know, who he's bringing in to be the second line center, or who you're bringing in to be, you know, that fourth line center or fourth line winger. Like, I look at a team like the Islanders, and the reason why that JG Pageau deal looks so good now is you're looking at it and you're saying, he's got, what does he have, 7 or 8 goals? But he's also an elite two-way forward. Mm-hmm. Like, who did Barry Trotz put out there with, you know, a minute and a half left? It was JG Pageau.
Right.
Right? Like, he trusts Pageau, you know, who could be a third-line center, fourth-line center. He could probably even be a first-line center. Like, he's that versatile of a player. And so I think when you're looking at this Jets team, that is something that also needs to be addressed here. Yes, the Jets had a great penalty kill in the second half of the season, and they've got some great defensemen. Like, obviously, Josh Morrissey, Dylan DeMello, after DeMello was acquired, that was a great shutdown pair. But I think that's something that I've noticed over the last few years. That's something that, you know, probably needs to be addressed. The Jets probably have to have a little bit more of that defensive mindset. Because we know when you're talking about, you know, the modern-day NHL, it's not just defensemen that defend. It's five-man units that defend. And you look at the Islanders, and they probably do it better than anybody.
Dave, tell me that I'm not wrong about all this Line A stuff, and that, you know, the concept of not getting fair value for him in a trade that shouldn't happen in the first place. I mean, again, I'm flabbergasted.
No, you're not wrong, Drew. I mean, we talked about it quite a bit last week, and I think most people in Winnipeg would agree. I mean, I joked about it, and obviously it seemed to get some good reaction on Twitter, because I was like, you know, the Magic Bean proposals you're hearing out there are laughable for a guy who, you know, hasn't even come close to scratching his surface yet. And look, I mean, in theory, his tweet isn't wrong in the sense that you do know what you've got in Ehlers, in the sense that you know how much his contract is, you know what it's going to cost you, you know you have cost certainty for a number of years with him, whereas Line A, you don't have that same certainty. While you certainly have a tremendous amount of upside, you know, especially in the light of the current pandemic and in light of the uncertainty around the cap.
And revenues.
And revenues.
Sure.
So yes, in theory, it's right, but I mean, you're right, Drew. I mean, this is a generational player, and so for the Jets, again, and I said this, people in Winnipeg, most people in Winnipeg who were alive in the 90s or were Jets fans in the 90s, remember the Oleg Tverdovsky, Chad Kilger sort of deal. And as he talked about it, we all talked about it last week, how the Jets aren't going to make that sort of...
They're still in therapy about the deal.
well, as are most Winnipeg. So I'm just saying that you're not going to be in a situation that you're like, you know what, as we talked about, you're trading him for a bag of pucks and a bunch of other things.
And there was obviously pressure from the new ownership. Who was it, Gluckstern, and who was the other guy, if I can remember.
Was it Burke?
Burke and Gluckstern. And the team was moving to Phoenix, and basically it was a choice, right, between Solani and Tkachuk.
Right.
And then Tkachuk scored 50 goals, so it looked like, you know, maybe that was the right choice. Mm-hmm. But the point is, you wanted to keep both of those guys, but it goes back to, you know, what I mentioned to you guys, you know, last week. Line A is in the prime of his career, right? Like, if you look at the stats, and we discussed this a few years back, I remember, if you look at forwards specifically, and when the elite goal-scoring numbers happen, right? Like, we looked at guys like the elite guys like Stamkos and Ovechkin and Crosby, right? Like, the prime years are between 21, 25, 26, right? Like, you start to see the drop-off, you know, in the late 20s, right? I'm talking about just goals and assists right now. I'm talking about offensive production.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers back that up, that Line A is currently entering the prime of his career. So that's even more reason to not want to trade him. Because, yeah, sure, I'll trade Line A if you're getting Evgeny Malkin back.
Well,
right? Like, I mean,
I wouldn't do that trade today.
Well, no, but
I mean, I know what you're saying. You're not using that as a direct example. You're just using that as
it has to be a guy that has just as much of an impact. It has to be, you know, a guy that's going to give you, you know, 80 to 90 points minimum.
The only guy on my list that I would consider doing it for
is Eichel.
That is it. That is my list. It is Jack Eichel list complete. If they said to you, we'll do Jack Eichel for Patrick Laine, one for one, I would make that trade. But guess what? Buffalo's probably not doing that.
No.
The Jets aren't, you know, aren't desperate to do that by any stretch of the imagination either, because if Patrick Laine wasn't going to sign long-term in Winnipeg, and we have no evidence to that effect whatsoever, he sure as hell isn't going to be signing long-term in Buffalo.
Jack Eichel is a top 10 center, in my opinion. I think a lot of people think Jack Eichel's a top 10 center, who's also at 23 years old in the prime of his career. So if Jack Eichel is traded by Buffalo, goodbye playoffs for the foreseeable future. Like, you wouldn't do that one-for-one trade.
Of course you wouldn't. Nothing about any trading any of these guys makes any sense. And I know that people are probably listening saying, well, if it doesn't make sense, why are you guys talking about it? And the truth is, we're being forced in some regard to talk about it because of irresponsibility by people who should know better outside. And well, I know that they're being irresponsible because it's fun and it's Twitter and it's speculative and that's the hot stove and that's why, you know, we do this all for a living. But, you know, they wouldn't say these. I mean, there's a reason why you haven't heard other names in it, why you haven't heard Austin Matthews' name in it. They pick on Winnipeg, and they do believe this. I'm not, you know, trying to be, oh, woe is us here in Winnipeg. I love the city. But they definitely say, well, why would a superstar transcendent player who's got options and is not that many years away from being an unrestricted free agent, why would he want to commit to a city like Winnipeg?
Which is hilarious if you think about it, following that premise through, Drew, because Scheifele signed here long-term. Kyle Connor signed here long-term.
Nikolai Ehlers.
So what I'm saying is that
Connor Hellebuck.
So every guy that the Jets have drafted have found that, you know, and again, the reality is, and we've talked about this, you know, Winnipeg isn't going to be the UFA destination of choice. But the truth is, how many UFAs actually work out to the degree that most folks want them to? And again, Mark Stone is probably the exception to the rule.
He wasn't even a pure UFA.
He wasn't a pure UFA, but I'm saying, like, there was a risk Vegas took. I'm sure Kelly McCrimmon had a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You'll sign a deal as soon as we get you signed, or traded for. But the reality is, look, people, when they're here, sign here. And I just think that it's easy. Line is an easy choice, an easy, you know, low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, you hear the converse of the Jets' asking price is exorbitant. Well, of course. Because they don't need to do the deal.
I will give you this brand new Mercedes Benz.
Yes.
You give me a Kia.
Yeah,
what? I mean, come on, people.
Drew, you drive a Kia.
I'm saying nobody's taking my Kia for their Benz. I do drive a Kia. So I mean,
Kias are nice. There's nothing wrong.
There's nothing wrong with a Kia.
We almost got a Kia, so instead we went with a van.
For the record,
Dodge Caravan. Waverly Dodge.
What's his name? John. What's the guy? Peterman from Seinfeld.
Jay Peterman.
No, what's his real name though?
It's John,
something like that. Anyways. Whatever is, when we did he was here in Winnipeg doing the HSC race, and we had him on our team. He's a rep for Kia.
Oh, there you go.
They actually make a very expensive Kia.
They do, and yeah, I don't have that one.
I quote him. He goes, LeBron James and I have that vehicle. And I was like, you think LeBron James is running around telling people the guy from Seinfeld, Peterman from Seinfeld, and him have that same vehicle?
Probably.
I don't think so.
John George O'Hurley Jr.
O'Hurley. Yeah. Thank you, Ezzy. Good Googling. When we come back, we talk about the priority attributes that the Jets are going to look for in a new defenseman. Should it be a stay-at-home sort of physical-style defenseman who's good in his own zone, or do they need a defenseman with some offensive upside? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
You know, the team appreciates what I do and the game that I bring, and you know, they put a lot of responsibility on me, so I think a combination of things has had things going well for me.
How good is it to be appreciated like you were on the other team?
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, obviously anytime, you know, your old team shows appreciation and, you know, what you meant to them, it's nice. And you know, nice warm welcome back to Winnipeg always feels good.
That was Ben Chiarot upon his return to Winnipeg as a member of the Montreal Canadiens. Of course, the Jets lost Chiarot in free agency. They were outbid by the Habs, and Chiarot had a great season for the Montreal Canadiens on the back end. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live with you on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So the reason why I played that clip from Ben Chiarot, and that leads seamlessly into our IC question of the day.
I thought Sean played that clip.
Well, Sean played it, but I suggested to Sean
prompting.
As my prompting, as part of my show plan. Thank you, Mr. Ginsburg. Yeah, can we cut his mic?
It's a great show plan.
Well, you actually could cut his mic.
You're right. I do have control in front of it now. That's nice. That's a nice feature that I have. Anyways, today's IC question of the day, and we'll talk about that this segment. We want to hear from you at Illegal Curve on Twitter, 129090 via text message. What is more important for the Jets to acquire, a physical stay-at-home defenseman a la Ben Chiarot, or an offensive puck-moving defenseman who may be somewhat, not a complete and total defensive liability, but maybe, you know, let's say less productive in his own end, but more productive in the offensive end. Want to hear from you, like I said, 1299, send us your texts or send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. So, Dave, I'll start with you for that question. If you had to pick one, and I know that a lot of people are out there saying, well, the Jets need both, and there's probably a pretty good argument to be said, to be made that they do need both. Which of those two would you have if you could only pick one?
Well, I think the Jets already have a number of you know, players who have the ability to get the puck out. You know, you've got the Sammy Niku types, you've got Pionk, you've got Tomello, you've got the guys. I don't know that they have that physical element that isn't a liability, right? I mean, you can have a physical element, but are they really helping you other than, you know, beating guys up in front of the net?
You don't want a slug.
Right. And so I would think that you'd probably be inclined to look for that simply because I think you have the talent to move the puck effectively. With guys like, if, you know, I mean, obviously Niku didn't play a lot this season, but, you know, a guy like Niku, a guy like,
Morrissey,
you know.
If they re-signed DeMello, so he's certainly adept at making
that first pass. We've seen all that's been written about Dylan DeMello and his ability to get the puck out of the jet zone and move it up quickly to the forwards. And, you know, and that's, you know, start off that transition. And so obviously it's a very important element. And, you know, you've got guys who can play physical. Tucker Poolman, I thought, really kind of, came into his own a little bit this season. You know, we were witness to what he was able to do in the AHL, but I thought he was able to bring it in effectively, especially at that contract. I mean, his contract is so affordable. So I think Tucker Poolman, you know, kind of solidified himself in that third pairing role for the Jets. But I think, you know, yeah, I think in that capacity, Drew, it's probably something that the Jets would do well to acquire.
Yeah, and we know that the Jets are going to have to acquire defensemen, right? Because, you know, when we went over the UFA defensemen, right, like guys like Dmitry Kulikov, you know, Nathan Beaulieu, these types of guys, I mean, the Jets ideally want to have 10 NHL defensemen, right? And, you know, Sammy Niku, to me, you know, is a key part of that, Dave, right? Because, you know, injuries obviously, you know, curtailed the season for him, but he's a guy that you expect to have a bigger role with some of these other guys leaving, right? Like, there's a good chance a guy like Kulikov's not going to be available. So it doesn't mean Sammy Niku just, you know, slots right into that, you know, left side, because we know that he, you know, can play the right side too. But the point is, there should be room for him to at least crack the top six, or at the very least be a seventh defenseman. But, you know, I would say to that, I wouldn't want a guy like Niku, you know, necessarily, you know, sitting in the press box for the majority of the season. But to get back to, you know, Drew's original question, and obviously, you know, the purpose of this exercise is to pick one. And I'm with Dave. I mean, I do think that the Jets need that shutdown defenseman, and Dylan DeMello did provide that role. And, you know, when you have guys like Morrissey and Pionk, you know, and Niku, when he's in the lineup, those guys can distribute the puck, and those are guys that, you know, I think Pionk is an interesting one to me, because I didn't love, you know, Pionk on the first power play unit. Like, you know, I know Dave and I have talked a lot about this on air. Maybe we've talked about it on air, but, you know, Nikolai Ehlers to me is a guy that could absolutely quarterback the power play from the point, right? Because you had Buff and Trouba for years there, and then you've had a variety of different players, but Pionk to me just, it didn't seem to really quite click.
Are you saying to go with a five defenseman, a five forward power play?
No, I'm not saying necessarily, you know, most teams do, you know, because four forwards and one defenseman. I'm just saying, like, Nick Ehlers, with his, you know, creativity and his puck handling ability, he's got a great shot too, a very underrated shot. You know, I like him in that position. He definitely has to be on the first power play unit. I'm just going to leave it at that. Going back to, you know, what you were talking about, though, and what you were asking, I mean, if the Jets don't sign DeMello, you definitely have to replace, you know, him with that type of defenseman.
Right.
I've said this for a month now.
Well,
TJ Brody, a left-shot defenseman who plays on the right side, right, because he played with Giordano, to me, like, Brody is a guy that's coveted by a lot of teams, right? Like, if Calgary doesn't re-sign Brody, then I think you're going to have, you know, many suitors. But if it's not Brody, it's got to be somebody like that. Like, Brendan Dillon is another guy that's been mentioned as far as being a guy, probably a second pair guy, right? So Brendan Dillon's another guy that kind of plays that, you know, physical kind of stay-at-home game. Can he chip in a bit of offense? Yes. But he's not going to get much more than, you know, 20 or 25 points. So the Jets have to have that type of defenseman in their top four, in my opinion. Because you've got guys that can create offense, right? We talked about it. You've got, whether it's Morrissey or Pionk, we expect both of those guys, you know, to be in the top four. So, you know, would you love to have a Torey Krug? Yeah, you'd love to have a Torrey Krug, but he's a smaller kind of puck-moving defenseman, similar to guys like Morrissey and Pionk. So it's going to be key for the Jets to identify that guy in free agency, because Alex Pietrangelo most likely is not coming here. Most likely Torrey Krug's not coming here. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about, you know, guys like, you know, Brendan Dillon, TJ Brody, those types of players.
Well, you know, going back to the play-in series against Calgary, one of the things that almost surprised me more than I expected is how physical, as how much difficulty the Jets had with the physicality of the Flames forward group. How I thought they were bigger and they were stronger, and the Jets, you know, we're really hemmed into their own zone a lot because of that physicality. Now, I'm not saying by any stretch, so don't, you know, misconstrue my comments, that the Jets need to have a defense that's filled with guys who are 6'4", you know, 230 pounds, but they, you know, they don't skate well and they don't make a good first pass. Not saying that at all, but I think they need someone or something to just counterbalance it a little bit more.
So your point would be that you would want the physical.
I would want, now, and I'm not, you know, it is possible that Tucker Poolman could continue to develop into that role, because I think that's sort of the role that he's earmarked for. He's not going to be, you know, an offensive dynamo, I think, at any point in his career.
Hold on, I don't force me to pull out his disallowed AHL goal, which was like Bobby Orr Lake.
Okay, well, disallowed is the operative word there.
Well, he still scored.
He ruled
offside after the fact.
Fair enough. But I don't think that Tucker Poolman is going to turn into like I said, a dynamic offensive player. But maybe he can bring that physical edge and that bite that I thought the Jets were missing without a guy like Ben Sherrod in the lineup. Never mind the absence of Dustin Byfuglien, and there's only one Dustin Byfuglien,
right,
and you're never going to find that guy again.
You know, another guy to me that could make a lot of sense on the right side is Chris Tanev. And we know that he has the history with the Moose and, you know, the True North organization. So you wonder if the Canucks are unable to sign Tanev, because you guys know he's going to get, you know, a little bit of a raise there. Obviously, Tanev, you know, isn't a, you know, $7 to $8 million a year defenseman like a guy like Torrey Krug, right, Dave?
Right.
But Tanev is a guy that, you know, if I'm not mistaken, he was making around $4.4 million. Right, so he's probably in the $5 million range. I don't know, $5.5 million. Just interesting, right shot defenseman. I mean, you watch the Canucks, right? And obviously Quinn Hughes is the key defenseman there, the defenseman of the future. But Chris Tanev played a huge role on the back end for the Canucks. So to me, Tanev would be a guy that, you know, could be a target for the Jets. But again, you know, there's a good chance that he re-signs in Vancouver. And again, you know, he's not a young player. So if you're signing Tanev, you know, you'd probably be a lot more comfortable with 3 years, 4 years, as opposed to, you know, a 5-year deal, because then maybe towards the end of that contract, you know, he starts to decline a little bit. Just another type of player. But there's no doubt, Drew, that if DeMello isn't an option to re-sign, then, you know, you have to have that really solid physical defensive defenseman, you know, to play with Josh Morrissey, because Jacob Trouba was the perfect complement. Obviously, he was a great offensive defenseman as well, but, you know, with that physicality and that ability to play that shutdown role, that's why, going back to that 2018 season, they worked so well and basically shut down every team's top line, because, you know, that defensive pair had it all.
It certainly did, and we know when the free agency is going to be now. Of course, it's less than a month away. Free agency starts Friday, October the 9th. The draft 2 days earlier on the October 6th and 7th. Complete coverage, as you would expect, here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, on IllegalCurve.com, and of course, with all the programming here on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Matt Wenzel of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. A bit of upheaval in that Penguins organization. It's expected to be a busy offseason. We know that they're already getting started with that, reacquiring Kasperi Kapanen. They traded away Nick Bjugstad last night. We'll talk to Matt next about the Penguins offseason. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here via text message. Send your text to 129090. Be a part of the show. We want to hear from you. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, that's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins, we're pleased to welcome to the program Matt Wenzel. Matt, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Doing fine and dandy, Matt. No complaints whatsoever. Penguins team that obviously had the very disappointing departure in the play-in round to the Montreal Canadiens, a team that most people thought that they'd be able to take care of, it being the 5-12 matchup. And then, you know, Jim Rutherford came out and he said that, you know, there was going to be change this offseason. And we've already started seeing some of that change. You know, they reacquire Kasperi Kapanen. They trade away Nick Bjugstad in a salary dump late last night. But truthfully, unless you are making a earth-shattering deal involving one of Crosby and Malkin or even Letang, you know, can anything really change that much with the Penguins unless one of those three is involved? And I'm not advocating for that. I'm just wondering, you know, it almost seems like every offseason Jim Rutherford comes out and says he's disappointed and change is going to come, but then it's almost like they're just sort of rearranging the deck chairs in my perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a completely fair and accurate way to look at it. You know, you wondered after a second straight playoff flameout if maybe things would be differently. But, you know, all they've really done to date is shake up the assistant coaches. I mean, Mike Sullivan's going to be back. As you noted, they've pretty much said that, you know, the big three is going to be back. I mean, we'll see if anything comes along that makes them change their mind about Chris Letang. And then, you know, they've said they wanted to play the same way, and that the fact that they made a trade for, you know, Kasperi Kapanen, a very fast winger, suggests they're going to try to play the same way, too. So, yeah, it's fair to wonder if they're not making changes to the coach, the core, the philosophy, you know, if they should expect a different result. Now, they're going to try to shake up the bottom six and maybe improve the bottom pair. And, yeah, the trade of Nick Bjugstad clears a spot and clears some salary cap space. But I still think the Penguins have a lot of work left to be done. And, you know, we'll see if this approach to essentially run it back and just change the supporting cast will be enough for them to be contenders next season.
You know, Matt, you just mentioned that you think that the Pens and Jim Rutherford have a lot of work to be done. And, you know, Drew mentioned off the top of the segment the Nick Bjugstad trade, you know, for the conditional draft pick. And we know that Pittsburgh is going to retain some of the salary, around $4 million a year. We don't know exactly how much salary. But when you talk about some of those other moves that might come, I mean, you hear some names out there, and obviously Matt Murray is a candidate to be traded, but when it comes to forwards, you know, Jared McCann is a guy that whose name has been out there, even though Jim Rutherford has said that, you know, he might want to keep McCann. But do you think that part of the reason why these moves are being made is to clear up cap space to potentially go after a big UFA? And in your opinion, who is a UFA that you would go after if you were Rutherford?
I just really don't think they're going to be able to make a big splash. I mean, I think it's going to be, you know, probably a similar free agency to last year where their big signing was Brandon Tanev, who was a great find for them. I just don't see them having the ability, unless they unload Chris Letang's contract, to actually, you know, pursue a significant free agent. You know, Jim Rutherford talked last night about the Bjugstad trade just getting them under the cap ceiling, and I don't know if that's, you know, based on kind of what they're projecting with their RFAs and stuff like that, but you know, I don't know what they're going to be able to accomplish in terms of that. I mean, maybe instead it's something, maybe it's a part of the Murray trade if they trade Murray, or I guess there's a chance they could trade Tristan Jarry, but it sure seems like Murray's going to be one to go. You know, maybe they can add a center there, but I think, you know, right now, you know, they might just give Teddy Bluger a chance to take on a bigger role as the third-line center. I mean, he was really good on a checking line role with Brandon Tanev and Zach Aston-Reese. I mean, those guys were essentially playing third line minutes last year. So maybe they bump them up and try to go the internal route. But I just don't really see them being able to make a splash, particularly with all the financial landscape due to the pandemic. I don't know if they're going to have the wiggle room or the willingness to spend the whole way to the cap.
You know, Matt, speaking of the internal, obviously the movement up from the AHL to the NHL is important for most NHL franchises. What are the Wilkes-Barre Scranton getting in J.D. Forrest?
Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting guy. Background is he was on the Boston College championship team in 2001 with a couple of former Penguins in Brooks Orpik and Rob Scuderi, and he's kind of come up through the ranks. He's a background with the U.S. National Development Team program. So I think that's interesting because he worked with some really good NHLers, at least current NHLers. And yeah, they praised his work with the defenseman down there. And yeah, they've gone internal. I mean, promoting Mike Vellucci, which I think was a good move there to be an assistant coach under Mike Sullivan, opened that void. And You know, they stayed internal with both Judy Forrest and Carmona is taking over as the general manager there. So he's a young guy, but I think the key there is continuity. That's what we've seen with some of their moves here, just bringing back guys like Todd Rudin, who's familiar with the team, and also keeping guys from within so they can play the same way. And I don't know how much, you know, the budget will factor into that as well. I mean, I know the Penguins are one organization that's had to furlough some staffers, so I don't know if that has anything to do with them keeping people around. But, you know, I think he's an interesting young coach, and we'll see what he does with that opportunity.
Matt Wenzel is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, you're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Matt covers the Penguins for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And Matt, you mentioned Chris Letang. He's sort of the biggest of the names that are potentially on the trade block for the Penguins. Sort of a two-part question. Do you believe that Letang will be traded? And how, if they do trade him, and obviously it's impossible to know what the return would be, but how does that improve the Penguins next season?
Well, I think that, you know, your second question kind of answered the first question. I mean, I don't see how they could make a deal that would make the Penguins better in the short term. And they're all about maximizing this two-year window, maybe three-year window. So I don't really know if there's a deal out there that would make them better. I'm sure they would certainly consider it if there were one. And, you know, I don't know that you can consider Chris Letang at his age an elite defenseman, but he's often a very good defenseman. You know, he doesn't quite have the same urgency that we saw a few years ago, and maybe he can recapture that. I know that they think that, you know, adding Todd Rudin will help. Rudin was an assistant coach here in Pittsburgh when Chris Letang was a young player and had a lot to do with his development, so maybe he can unlock some things there for Letang. But yeah, I just don't see that deal getting done because it would have to be a deal that makes them better. I mean, they're not looking to just shed salary, or they're not looking to rebuild. You know, they want to win as long as Crosby is here, and I just don't know if there's a deal out there. And, you know, it doesn't look like Justin Schultz is going to be back. It would be extremely surprising. So that would leave them without two right-handed defensemen. So unless they're getting a real stud right-handed defenseman back, I just really don't see a deal getting done with Chris Letang. But with Jim Rutherford, you never know. He might be getting a call ready right now, so we'll see.
Yeah, well, if he does, then you need to just let us know.
Yeah. Seems like the Penguins have a move every week, Matt, which is great for us to talk about here. But, you know, we talked about the goaltending earlier, and you mentioned there always is the chance that, you know, Tristan Jarry is traded, but it seems more likely that it's going to be Matt Murray. Of course, both guys are pending RFAs. And wanted to ask you, you know, what you think the Pens can get in return for Matt Murray. I mean, you've heard that, you know, it could be Murray straight up for a draft pick. Do you think, you know, a team would give up a first rounder, or, you know, would it be a second rounder? Would it be a prospect? I mean, you hear a team like Colorado might be interested in Murray, or you hear a team like the Detroit Red Wings might be interested in Murray. Like, what can you get for Murray considering that, you know, he doesn't have a contract right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably a pretty limited market of suitors. I mean, one, you mentioned the contract. I know last offseason he was looking for a deal, maybe not quite Andre Vasilevsky money, but a pretty significant long-term deal. So whoever's trading for him also has to do it knowing that they're turning around and giving him a long-term deal, probably north of $6 million. And then I don't know how many teams he makes sense for because, you know, he had the two awesome cup runs, you know, in 2016, 2017, and has been pretty solid in the playoffs. But he's just been really inconsistent in the regular season. He's battled injuries. He's never started more than 50 games in a season. So, you know, I don't know if teams think he can be a guy that gets them like a, you know, kind of like a mediocre team who can lift them into the playoffs or make them contenders. I think he makes more sense for a team like Colorado, maybe a team like Edmonton or Toronto that they feel like he can be the backbone of an already really good team. And, you know, so I don't know how much that limits his market, but, yeah, I'd be very surprised, you know, honestly, if they got a good first-round pick. I mean, maybe a team picking in the late 20s would be willing to do it. Maybe a pick's going back the other way, too. But, yeah, it looks like it's going to be some sort of future compensation. I mean, I think the Penguins will always be open to veteran players who can help them now, but they might look at it as adding an asset that they can potentially flip later. I mean, that's what they've done with a lot of their prospects and picks, but... Yeah, I don't see the return being very high for Murray, just given, you know, how poor he was this season and just how inconsistent he's been overall over the past three seasons.
Well, you know, Matt, talking about prospects and the Penguins, you know, we know they're a win-now team, as you've talked about throughout the segment. But are there any guys on that Wilkes-Barre-Scranton team or guys overseas that this organization can look to maybe next season to take a step forward and help them?
Yeah, three guys come to mind. One, Samuel Poulin, who played, had a great year in the Q last year. They had him in their postseason training camp. He didn't go to the bubble with them, but they like him a lot. He's 19. He's very strong for his age, has a pretty good shot. So they like him a lot. So I think he's going to have a chance to make the team out of camp. And then talking about Wilkes-Barre, you have Pierre-Olivier Joseph, who was the main part of the Phil Kessel trade. They played him a ton at the AHL level last year. They really like him. And it also probably doesn't hurt that Mike Vellucci, who worked with him last year, is now on the Pittsburgh bench as an assistant. So we'll see if he gets an opportunity to maybe knock Jack Johnson out of the lineup. And then Drew O'Connor, college free agent, they added a big kid, really kind of a late bloomer, really turned it on the past couple of years. So he's probably a guy that will start off on Wilkes-Barre-Scranton. But I think, you know, if he has a good camp, I think they'll give him a shot. I mean, look what happened with John Marino last year. I mean, they had a pretty good idea that he was going to be able to play as a rookie. But, you know, once he showed that he could play, they made room for him. They got him in the lineup, and then they got Eric Goodbranson out of there to give him a full-time spot.
Last question for you, Matt. Matt Wenzel of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette is our guest. Why should Penguins fans have faith that Jim Rutherford is the right guy, the right man for the general manager role, given some of the, what I'll describe as questionable acquisitions and questionable contracts that he's signed players to as of recent?
Yeah, I mean, it's fair to wonder if Jim's lost his touch a little bit, or at least, you know, if he's the guy who's going to be able to get him out of it. I mean, I would point to the success he's had. You know, I think if he has another great run like he did in 2015, 2016, when he brought in guys like Kessel and Bonino and Hornquist, then maybe this team has another cup in them. But, yeah, I think there's been some questionable moves. And, you know, the good thing about Jim is that he's willing to admit that he made a mistake quickly. He doesn't sit around waiting for a guy who's struggling to turn it around. I mean, he'll bail quickly, as we're seeing with Nick Bjugstad here. But that's also led to a lot of turnover. I mean, just look at, you know, trying to find a third-line center since Nick Bonino left in 2017. They added Riley Sheehan. They added Derek Brassard. They added Nick Bjugstad. Those guys didn't work out. We could see McCann go. So, you know, it's fair to wonder if every time he makes a trade that maybe they're, you know, getting a slightly worse, or just if that turnover is kind of taking a toll on the team. But, you know, I still think Jim, you know, his track record speaks for itself. You know, I think he has a good idea about what the core can do, and it's just a question of making the right moves. I mean, and it's important to remember that winning a cup is hard. I know, especially here in Pittsburgh, everybody thinks they should just be in the finals every year. You know, it's hard. There's other good teams. But, yeah, I think there certainly is some pressure mounting on Jim Rutherford to turn this team around, get them deeper in the playoffs the next year or two, or potentially, you know, that could be it for him here.
Matt Wenzel covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Matt, appreciate your time, appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
No sweat. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Matt. When we come back, the financial reckoning caused by COVID-19 is coming to NHL clubs throughout the league should the Jets try and take advantage of internal team salary caps to improve their roster. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Teams are in organizational meetings right now around the National Hockey League, especially the cap teams, trying to figure out how do they get down to that flat cap of 81.5. But beyond that, there's another group of teams, because of financial situations involving their NHL owners, who are looking at an internal cap, which is never good news for GMs. And some say that internal cap for a lot of clubs could be in the low 70s.
That's part of insider trading from earlier this week. That's TSN Hockey insider Darren Dreger talking about the salary cap catastrophe that you're going to experience throughout the NHL, particularly if it's not $81.5 million for a lot of teams, if it's some number that's lower than that, as the question about revenue is a legitimate one for a lot of teams because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, located in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly, pardon me, for over 30 years. Really should change that in my copy here. That would make it a lot easier for me on a weekly basis. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Ezzy, you were at Bernstein's yesterday, you said?
Yeah, I was. I was working at home, working from home.
Yes.
And I picked up a little IC sandwich for lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little side of coleslaw. It comes. That's the IC sandwich, for those who haven't had it before. It comes with a side of coleslaw and a couple of pickles. I mean, yes, you have the option of not getting that, but I'm a chaser, so I get that.
For those of you who don't speak Yiddish, a chaser means a fat pig.
Exactly.
I don't even think it means a fat pig. It just means a pig.
Yeah, but in this case.
Yeah, you could be a lean pig.
Yeah.
How many lean pigs are you seeing? Are you seeing a lot of lean pigs out there?
There's some svelte pigs.
There's some svelte pigs. You know, some real athletic pigs nowadays. You know, between the pigs and the click from last week, which we'll get to later, this is just, you know, well, the whole show's off the rails.
You know, the firestorm that click conversation set off.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. We haven't had that much Twitter activity, I think, since you know, the
Jets came back
since we spoke about spam the year before.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. It's the most feedback we've had since we announced the Jets were returning on this station, however many years ago that was at this point in time. What, 11 years ago now? Weird, time flies. Crazy. Yeah. Anyways, let's...
Oh, 10 years.
10 years, right. Well, yeah, 10 years. Sorry, we started 11 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, let's talk about the audio that I played there about Dreger, talking about how lots of teams, their salary cap isn't going to be $81.5 million. It's going to be $71.5 million, or it's going to be $73 million, because, well, nobody has any idea when fans are going to be allowed back into arenas, but it certainly doesn't seem...
It's not going to be December.
No, well, it doesn't seem like it's going to be anytime soon, that's for sure.
What did the NBA say? I think they said Christmas? Is there
restart date? Now it sounds like the NHL is even looking not for December 1st, they're looking more January 1st, mm-hmm. apparently, mm-hmm. as they keep hoping and praying that there's going to be a vaccine, or they're going to be able to allow, you know, 1,000 people in, or 2,000 people in, whatever the number is. Do the Jets need to be aggressive? And I know the Jets, you know, I'm sure they have a salary discussion as well going on in their front office.
Mm-hmm.
But this strikes me as such an opportunity for the Winnipeg Jets, a team that right now does have salary cap space entering next season. Yeah, a good amount of salary cap space where they can really take advantage of these teams throughout the league that might not have as much revenue as the Jets do. And when I say that, I'm including ancillary revenue, meaning developments around the arena that may not necessarily be tied exactly to the Winnipeg Jets, mm-hmm. but they're tied to the True North organization. I'm not going to make the distinction between revenue coming into the Jets versus revenue coming in to True North Square
and things
of that nature.
Yeah.
Do the
Drew,
Jets...
when did this show turn into like actuarial mathematics?
Hold on, let me get my abacus.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think anybody has to worry about us
doing
actuarial math. Yeah, exactly. Your dad, the math professor. But I mean, it strikes me right now that the Jets need to be aggressive. That if at any point in time for this team, for Kevin Cheveldayoff to be almost vicious with his fellow general managers, we saw it to some extent.
But you talked about that, right? When we were talking about RFAs and offer sheets.
Same thing.
I think you're right, Drew. I think that there is an opportunity to be aggressive. You have to be cognizant of your own.
No question.
You know, expectations. You've got Patrick Laine, who's going to want a big number deal coming up in the near future. So, I mean, that's obviously something that's going to factor in. It's going to take a sizable portion of your salary cap. So, I mean, that's obviously something you have to be aware of. But yeah, no, I think the point is creativity is key to success. I think, you know, the draft and develop model, which again, we always laugh about because every team drafts and tries to develop. Obviously, teams like we just talked to Matt Wenzel from Pittsburgh Post Gazette, the Penguins are a team that's more likely to trade prospects to win now than mm-hmm. they are to develop them. But, you know, like the Jets organization, we know has done a better job of internally drafting and developing those players. But at the same time, you know, you have to be aggressive. You have to know that, look, we have holes and they can be filled if we take a certain aggressive stance. And I think this summer, and we talked about it, last summer was key because you had Laine and Connor had to get deals. But this summer, I think, is almost more important.
It's fall already.
Is it? No, it's not.
Well, it's pretty close to fall, but I mean, I know what you're
when
saying.
When is the summer solstice?
September 22nd.
I know, I know, but I know what you're saying.
Anyways, the point I'm making.
Check the leaves on the trees outside.
But you saw it yesterday with Bjugstad. I know. I mean, Nick Bjugstad, whatever you think of him as a player, the Penguins.
Minnesota.
The Penguins gave him to the Minnesota Wild, and they gave up nothing in return. They gave up a conditional seventh round pick that only gets exchanged if Bjugstad plays 70 games next year or if he gets 30 points.
No, like,
so you get Bjugstad for nothing.
No, it was that is purely, that's as pure of a salary dump as it gets because you had to retain some of the salary.
Yeah.
Right? So you're right. I mean, you don't get much for Nick Bjugstad and you're probably going to trade Matt Murray, you're probably going to trade Jared McCann. You're going to have to trade somebody else. And the Penguins are just trying to get under the salary cap, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like, you know, we talked to Matt Wenzel about this, and I asked him, you know, if there are, you know, one or two UFAs that, you know, Rutherford might be targeting. Obviously, it's not Alex Pietrangelo. It's not Taylor Hall. Like, they don't have $8 or $9 million to give a top UFA. So you're talking about, you know, the Brandon Tanems, the $3 to $4 million guys. But the point is, when you get back to the Jets, just because, you know, the salary cap is $81 million, guys, doesn't mean that, you know, Mark Chipman and Chevy are saying, yeah, let's spend, you know, right up to $80 million. They have a cap that they're probably targeting. And the thing that was so, you know, I guess, you know, for lack of a better term, disturbing about Frank Saravalli's report is you're talking about actual people that are, they're having their salaries cut. Like,
sure.
20%, it doesn't matter what your job is, if you're in hockey ops or, you know, whatever, broadcasting, game production. I mean, that's significant. And, you know, that's obviously unfortunate for any of the teams. Like, I think there were 17 teams.
The Jets included.
The Jets included that have already, you know, cut salaries, and that's horrible. So that, these are real people in organizations that, you know, that their salaries are being affected. So, you know, there are going to be teams that probably, you know, wanted to spend an extra $2, $3, $4 million that aren't going to do it. And yes, I do think, you know, getting back to your original question, the Jets should absolutely be aggressive, but maybe that means they spend a few million less than, you know, they originally thought they were going to 5 months ago.
If you're the Jets and you look like a team at the Arizona Coyotes, a team that missed paying signing bonuses, you know, earlier this month, you have to be looking at that roster and saying to them, we'll take that player right over there who, you know, you can't afford to pay what his contract dictates. Do you pay him? And we want that guy and we'll take your financial commitment because you can't afford it. We're going to be vicious about it. They have to be that way right now this offseason because
it's going to check out.
It's going to, yeah, they might have to get their checkbook out. But this is an organization that, you know, now is the time. The opportunity is available to them. And I know that they don't have the revenue coming in that they are expected with no fans in the building either. Or concerts or events or things of that nature. But, you know, this is a time where you can be vicious and you can improve your team. And yes, it's going to cost you a little bit of money, but I think this is the opportunity to show something to your fans in doing so. When we come back, Sean Tierney from ChartingHockey.ca is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsburg, Dave Minuke with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here via text message. We want to hear from you. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates will apply. And of course, our website, it has the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio that's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From ChartingHockey.ca, he's a good friend of the program. We're pleased to welcome back Sean Tierney. Sean, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
That's great. Thank you so much for joining us on this Saturday morning. Obviously, Sean, we want to touch on a number of different issues related to the NHL, to the playoffs, to free agency, but want to start with a Winnipeg Jets question, given, you know, obviously what our main focus is here. And that has to do with what I want to describe as what should be priority number one for the Winnipeg Jets. And we know this past year the Winnipeg Jets were maybe analytically, they were not as good as their record ended up being, and so much of their success was Connor Hellebuyck being out of this world earlier in the show, you know, all offseason we've talked about, you know, priority for the Jets. Should it be a defenseman, a puck-moving defenseman, a stay-at-home sort of physical defensive defenseman? Should it be that second-line center upgrade? If you had to pick one area looking at the Winnipeg Jets and particularly looking at some of their advanced stats, analytical numbers, which area would you be looking to upgrade the most out of all the holes that the Jets have in their lineup?
Right. So I think you sort of touched on the key point. We know the Jets, from an analytical point of view, really outperformed, and that was largely Connor Hellebuck standing on his head all season long. The Jets, their sort of number one problem was that they gave up the most quality against in the league all season long. So if you weight all the shots that they gave up by the quality of those shots, how close they were to the net and all that sort of thing, no one was giving up more against. So even Detroit, Chicago, New Jersey, some of these really bad teams, Winnipeg outpaced them all. So what that says to me is for this team to come back to the playoffs next year in probably the more standard format, and to kind of solidify themselves as a contending team again, they need to address the defense first. So Connor Hellebuck has been up and down, but he was fantastic last year. It looks like he's the kind of goalie that you can just sort of lock it and set it for a while. The forwards, you know, tons of offensive potential there still. And so I think, you know, just sort of from a stats point of view, it's addressing that defense that has a lot of turnover coming, just four guys on contract going into next year. Maybe not a clear number one, maybe not a clear number two even in this defense group overall. So I think if I was in the free agent market, I'd be looking to add at least one sort of mid-range to upper-range defenseman and maybe two.
Sean, we want to talk to you about the conference finals and, you know, specifically last night's epic game between the Islanders and Lightning, but we also wanted to pick your brain about some pending UFAs. We've been talking a lot here on this radio show and here in Winnipeg about, you know, some UFAs who might be options, you know, for the Jets, and obviously some of the bigger name guys probably aren't coming here, but we still want to ask you about those guys and specifically what the advanced stats, you know, say about them. And we wanted to start off with Alex Pietrangelo. I know you're very familiar with Pietrangelo, and, you know, he's a guy that, you know, many Leafs fans are hoping that might be an option, you know, if he doesn't re-sign in St. Louis, which if you, you know, saw Jeremy Rutherford of the Athletics tweets, it looks like there hasn't been much progress there, and there's a good chance that, you know, Pietrangelo is going to test the UFA market. But, you know, if a team is going to shell out, you know, $8 or $9 million a year for Pietrangelo, you know, do the fancy stats justify, you know, giving him that type of money?
Yeah, it's an interesting case where the fancy stats sort of align with the eye test. I think he sort of pops, you know, for anyone who's sort of, if you're watching the game and you watch a player who moves the puck like he does and can shoot like he does and control a game, the eye test is there, but the advanced stats back it up too. For the Blues this year, is sort of a strange mixture on defense for them, trying to find defenders who could control the flow of quality shots, and Pietrangelo was one of those. He was in the good quadrant of the scatter plots that I like to tweet out on Twitter, just saying that he was on ice for more quality for than against, and that's in heavy minutes, so about 12, almost 1,300 even strength minutes. And so he had a quality shot share of about 53%, which is really positive when you're logging those sorts of minutes and taking the tough assignments that he does. But on an individual level, what you see with Pietrangelo is that he can drive play kind of regardless of who he's paired with. The Blues moved him up and down the defense pairings. They tried him with everybody. And his results didn't change, but when you move Falk away or Dunn away from him, those defenders tended to post less positive results. Corey Schneider, who's at shutdown line, does a lot of hand tracking of stats we don't get from the NHL, things like zone entries, zone exits, passing. And when you take a look at all those, Pietrangelo is in sort of the top 10% of all defensemen across the board. So he can create those zone exits, creates useful passes in the zone, good at creating zone entries for a defenseman too. And then just sort of in terms of his own shots himself, a really sort of interesting thing with him is that he's one of those guys who will go backdoor. So when we look at his shot map, he's got shots from the right point where he hangs out, but he'll sneak into the high slot. He'll go backdoor to the left post, and he's got goals and shots from kind of all over the place. So you're really looking at that all-around kind of defenseman who can touch all the bases, both from eye test and the analytics, too.
You know, Sean, Taylor Hall is a pending UFA, and it looks like he isn't going to stay in Arizona. We know he can score goals and make plays, but what do the advanced stats say about his all-around game?
Yeah, Taylor Hall is a little bit more of a mixed bag. And, you know, we're looking at a player who's bounced through several sort of lower-range teams, with Edmonton where they were when he was there, and Arizona and New Jersey. And so Taylor Hall's advanced stats, despite his good counting stats individually, he continues to post a sort of negative overall defensive impact. One stat I really like for that is Evolving Wild's wins above replacement, and that breaks it into offense, defense, and power play. And Taylor Hall was a negative, fairly notable negative in defense again this season. And so it kind of drops him below some of the other options that you can slide into the lineup that are going to address some of the obvious needs that the Jets have, where offense isn't really the concern with some of the big names you can run out, but addressing that sort of defensive responsibility is. And so despite sort of the name cachet, Hall wouldn't be a guy from a Jets point of view that I'd be looking to mix in. I think he duplicates some of the offense that the team already has without addressing the defensive need. In fact, probably digging their hole a little bit deeper.
Sean Tierney is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Sean does some great work that you can find, of course, at chartinghockey.ca. We encourage you to follow Sean on Twitter as well, at chartinghockey. You know, Sean, Tyson Barrie was a big acquisition by the Toronto Maple Leafs last year, and to put it mildly, it did not work out the way all sides intended. He had a pretty horrific year for the Maple Leafs. You know, he's a free agent, and he's obviously going to have a market. What would you say to anybody who acquires Tyson Barrie in terms of, you know, his offensive upside is legitimate, but just how bad or how concerning is his defensive drawbacks?
Yeah, they're real. Toronto wasn't quite as bad defensively as they sometimes get a reputation for being. They're willing to trade chances, but it's not, they're not the black hole that they used to be. And Tyson Barrie sort of wore a little bit of that, undeserved rap as well. He was actually, just sort of league average in terms of shots against when he was on the ice, but a big positive in shots for, when he was on the ice. So he had the right share of sort of shot quantity and shot quality as well when he was on the ice. But if you break it down to sort of individual components, again, that war stat that Evolving Wild does, his even strength defense is really, truly atrocious. And so it's the kind of situation where although you get some of the individual offense from a player like this, you know you're trading it off ultimately on the back end too. And the on-ice results in Toronto actually probably floated his results a little bit. Again, though, something like Pietrangelo in a poor man's way, he's well above average in creating carry-ins on offense. He's about average, give or take, maybe a little better on zone exits. And so there is something to his profile. And if I was a team that had a lot of defensive structure and thought you could bring him in and maybe ask a little bit less of the player, somewhere like New York Islanders or a Dallas, a place that has some good structure, it might be a player you target. But again, Winnipeg's major need is to find those responsible guys who don't take too many chances and can keep the puck out of the slot. And this isn't Tyson Barrie. So again, another guy I would probably be passing on if I was Jets management.
Sean, we want to ask you about one more UFA, and then we had a question for you about the conference finals. You know, a guy that I've been talking about a lot on the show that I think would just be a perfect fit for the Jets is TJ Brodie, a left-shot defenseman who has played primarily on the right side for the Flames alongside Giordano. And, you know, we know that, you know, TJ Brodie is not a guy that's going to put up, you know, massive offensive numbers, but do those underlying numbers, the type of defensive impact that he has, to you, is that a perfect fit for the Jets, who obviously, you know, need to address the right side?
Yeah, absolutely. This is exactly the kind of name that I think from a stats angle you're looking for when you compare with what the Jets' need likely is. He led all defensemen with the Flames in terms of quality shot share and quantity of shots, so Corsi and expected goals. He was their best overall defenseman, ahead of Giordano, ahead of sort of the other top members of their group there. And he's the perfect kind of complementary player where you're not looking at probably a big ticket in terms of bringing him in, but the kind of person who has done this reliably over time, just contributed positively to keeping the puck out of those high quality areas in the defending zone. And then another, like, sort of underneath the hood with him is his exit work in terms of both how often he creates zone exits and how successful he is top of the league. He'd be sort of 90th percentile or above in terms of getting out of the zone with puck control. And again, that's, I think, music to Winnipeg Jets fans and management's ears. The kind of player that you can trust to lug the puck out is ultimately the best solution for the problems they had, is to just have the puck out of your zone altogether and not worry about keeping people to the outside. So I think Brody is that sort of second-tier citizen, sort of like a Chris Tanev level of name, where it's not going to be the Petrangelo money, but would probably ultimately suit the needs that the Jets have overall. And is the kind of name that might ultimately settle on Winnipeg as a home to, while guys like Petrangelo might be rumored to some, you know, some of the markets like Toronto ultimately. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of Brody too, and I think he would address a need for them.
Jean, after that first game between the Islanders and Lightning, we didn't know what to expect, but it's, you know, settled down now a little bit after three games. We often talk about expected goals. When it comes to the Lightning-Islanders series, just how close are these two teams?
Yeah, they're basically a saw-off, which is a little bit of the Tampa Bay Lightning coming back to the pack a little bit. They tend to be great at creating tons of quality for themselves and then not allowing much against. And the Islanders, through the season, tended to be more of a dull team. And so that's the top left of the scatter plots I tweet out, where you don't create a ton for yourself, allow even less for your opponents. And when you're a low-skill team overall, like the Islanders, you kind of want to grind the game down into that sort of a style of play where chances are few and far between and you increase the chance that any one shot can win the game. But what we've seen from the Islanders in the playoffs is they've really dialed up their rate of creating quality without surrendering anything on defense. And so these two teams, they plot right beside each other. Their little logos are right beside each other on all the graphs they tweet out. And the Islanders are really dangerous because more than just the overall quality that they control, they don't take shots that aren't quality shots. And I tweet out a shot map for teams at the whole team level, and they've got a cluster right in the high slot and down to the crease, and they take all their shots from there. And they almost refuse to take anything that's ugly, which does two things. One is it pumps up your expected goals because you're taking those high-quality shots, but it makes it really difficult to get in the lane and block their shots and turn it into counterattacks, which can feed a speedy team like the Lightning to give them opportunities in transition. So we're seeing the Islanders just sort of, despite maybe not having some of that name value that the Lightning has, they're right there with them in terms of the underlying numbers, and the results in the series are starting to kind of play that out too.
That's the Eastern Conference, Sean. With the Western Conference, Golden Knights and Stars, the Stars obviously lead that series 2-1. But when it comes to the expected goal differential and 5-on-5 team quality rate differential, how is that series looking from the advanced stats, the analytical numbers through the first three games?
Yeah, so Dallas just continues to defy the odds. They're the worst team left of the four, for sure. They're sort of dragging the negative side of the quality share, giving up more than they allow. And they've just sort of, despite being a poor team in terms of shooting percentage, they were well below average all season long, and they scored below expectation. They've been way above expectation through the bubble playoffs so far. And so Vegas is way, way, way out ahead. They're difference in expected goals is about plus 1.6 per 60. And to put that in context, Vegas led in the regular season in expected goal difference at 0.6 per 60. So they're more than double the dominant team that they already were in the regular season. They're just shredding opponents, and they're doing it to Dallas too. And so far, Dallas hasn't cared because Khudobin has been reasonable in net for them, and they're outscoring their expectations. So in the scatter plots that I like to do, they both are plotting in fun, which means they're giving up tons of quality. They're generating lots of quality as well. And so we've kind of got a back and forth exciting series. Ultimately, that should favor Vegas. They're the higher skilled team from top to bottom. But, you know, when you get into these series where it's just a race to four wins, all it takes is a fluky bounce and an overtime win here or there. And, you know, Dallas could be through to the final. So ultimately, I still think Vegas comes out ahead. They've just been so good for so long. I think they've still got this series, but you know, you never say never when you're in an elimination series like this.
If you want to read more of Sean's work, you can check him out at chartinghockey.ca and, of course, on Twitter, at chartinghockey. Does a great job of exploring the analytical side of the game and making it easy for dullards like ourselves to understand. Sean, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Take care, Sean. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Eastern Conference playoff series. Look back at last night's Lightning Islanders game. Chris Peters of ESPN.com joins us at 10:30 to talk about the draft and much more to come throughout the entire Stanley Cup playoffs and the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. Time for a look at the Bodog.net scoreboard. It was an exciting game last night between the Islanders and the Lightning. The Islanders pulling out the 5-3 victory after the Lightning came back to tie it in the third period, making it a series now 2-1. Here is how it sounded.
Shot block, the rebound, they score! Kyle Clutterbuck! Johnny Gord, lay it for Sergachev in front, he scores! What a goal! Top shelf! Give and go, Pageau, Pelech, he scores! A beautiful goal by Adam Pelech! Nelson circles out in front, they score! Anthony Beauvillier! 3-1 Islanders! Cross for Kucherov, they score! Andre Palat, Tampa Bay within one. They score! Tipped in! This game is tied. I think it was Tyler Johnson that got a piece of that. Beauvillier gets it back. Nelson, he scores! Brock Nelson, the Islanders back on top.
Then the game ended with some fisticuffs as the physicality and the dislike is growing between these two teams, as you would expect, entering just finishing game 3 of the Eastern Conference Finals. That's a look at the Bodog.net scoreboard brought to you by Bodog.net. Head to Bodog for sports odds, poker strategy, and free-to-play casino games. Bodog.net, make a play.
You know, just a few quick comments on that game last night. We talked about it, you know, during the first hour. Such an awesome game, right? Because, you know, Dave, you know, talked about it with, you know, Sean Tierney. The Lightning win the first game 8-2, so you're thinking, like, what's going on here? Is this going to be a series? And then, you know, Kucherov scores that goal in game 2 with seconds left, yeah. And you're thinking, like, you know, how many teams have ever come back from down 2-0 to the conference finals? The answer is none, right? So you're thinking this series is over. Yesterday, you know, the Lightning tied that game up in the third, and, you know, I thought it was just poetic justice, you know, that Brock Nelson scored the winning goal because, you know, Killorn hit him from behind and was suspended for game 3, right? So, I mean, Brock Nelson has been great during these playoffs. Zheji Pageau, we've talked about quite a bit. You know, he's been such a great acquisition. He's been, you know, great all playoffs long. You know, and then, you know, you heard Anthony Beauvillier there. You know, he's up to 14 points in these playoffs. Like, Beauvillier is a kind of a forgotten guy. You hear a lot about, you know, Matt Barzal and, you know, Jordan Eberle to a lesser extent. But, you know, Beauvillier is a great playmaker. You know, he can also pop some goals in. Just going back to what I said, you know, last segment, Drew, or pardon me, last hour, just love this Islanders team. Like, there's just, they don't quit. There's so much fight in them. They're so well coached. You know, I'm really looking forward to game 4 tomorrow because we have a series now.
Yeah, exactly. And you can't talk about game 3 without mentioning the absence, of course, of Alex Killorn, who was suspended for that one game, and Braden Point.
Yeah.
I mean, if Braden Point is out of this series for, you know, any length of time, if he's out, you know, tomorrow's game as well. Well, you know, the Lightning and the juggernaut that they are, you know, are less of a juggernaut. You know, no Stamkos, no Point means that a lot of pressure gets put onto the shoulders of Nikita Kucherov, and I mean, he can certainly handle that. But it's a different Tampa Bay Lightning team without Braden Point there, given how he has had, he's just been exceptional this year so far in the playoffs.
And you know, Anthony Cirelli's playing on that top line center, and then, you know, Yanni Gourde has moved up, you know, from the third line to play the second line, and, you know, you've still got a lot of great players there, you know, on Tampa Bay. I thought it was really interesting, guys, that, you know, John Cooper stuck with, you know, 11 forwards, 7 defensemen. There aren't that many coaches that use that.
For
but
sure.
You're thinking, Dave, that, you know, no Braden Point, no Alex Killorn. Mm-hmm. You know, you're thinking, okay, the Lightning are going to go back to 12 forwards. But he loves having Luke Shen as that 7th defenseman, right, to have that, you know, kind of flexibility to put him in, you know, to penalty kill or just to have that extra defenseman. Mm-hmm. So I really thought that they were going to go to, you know, the 12-6 traditional format. But I agree with you. If Braden Point isn't ready to go, you know, for the rest of the series, which, you know, that's what they're talking about out of Tampa Bay. They're saying, like, this isn't, you know, necessarily a day-to-day injury. He could miss, you know, the rest of the series.
Look, if you're not playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs, if you're missing a playoff game, there's no neat reason to think that it's necessarily a minor injury.
Right.
Because usually you only miss a game if you're missing a limb when it comes to the playoffs.
Sure, and we have no idea because, you know, we think we know, like, you know, a Point, if you didn't see it, he left the game in the first period after a bit of a collision there. So it looks like, you know, it's probably, I guess we could isolate it to lower body, Dave. But Braden Point's one of the best centers in the league. So, I mean, can the Lightning still win the series? Yes, but it's a big loss.
Yeah, and not having, I mean, the fact that they're doing all of this without Stamkos is just, I mean, we know how big a juggernaut Tampa Bay is, but the fact that they've been able to do this without Stamkos,
right.
I mean, you can only imagine what this team would look like and how different probably this series would be if he was in it.
When we come back, we shift our focus to the NHL draft for the next little while. Chris Peters, ESPN draft analyst, is going to join us to talk about the NHL draft. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.